You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kalula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
This is your host of the most, Nikki Kalula. We're going to jump right into this episode. We have a very, very close friend of mine and a very extraordinary artist, Mr. Jackson Stokes. How are you, Jackson?
I'm doing well, Nikki. It's good to see you again, buddy.
Good to see you too, man. You've been on the road with the Almond Revival Band. You're on the road now with your solo project. Tell me, when are you sleeping? How is life on the road? How long have you been at home for the last year?
Yeah, well, I mean, the last 2 years have been a little crazy, in like a good way, all chosen craziness, you know. So right now, I've actually been able to thaw out for, you know, a couple weeks, 3 weeks after the Almond Family Revival. But between last year, we did all 50 states in 49 days with Devin and Donovan. And then went straight from that into some Euro touring. And whenever I'm not with Devin, I'm just trying to push my solo career and get that going. So, you know, it's what I always dreamt of. So I'm crazy. And, you know, I do get some sleep every once in a while.
Well, that's the hard part. It's like when you're on the road, you're in a different bed. You're like in a different time zone, depending on where you are. Mm-hmm. How has that kind of affected performances? Just like, you know, getting through with the tour, like how has that affected you?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm blessed to say it's like kind of part of life now, you know what I mean? But there's a lot of things that I like to do to kind of center myself and have some consistencies on the road, you know, because it's always a different place or a different bed. So I got kind of my same things I listen to and my sleep mask and things like that to really keep it. And, you know, I just try to go by the military rule of sleep when you can sleep, eat when you can eat, you know, rest when you can rest. I've definitely realized the power of just resting, you know, on the road, the amount, like when you have a day off, you know, you're always like, oh, I could do this or I could do this. I could do this. But sometimes it's really important to do nothing and reset. And, you know, cause you got to charge up because that 90 minutes, 2 hours, 3 hours is the most important part. And you got to be 100% for that. So
I always feel like you can't do much sightseeing when you're on the road just because it's not the place for it. You know what I mean? It's like you're there to do business. And it's like the only time I do it is if I have like an off day. And then I'm like, okay, I have a free day to do whatever I want. And I'm in the city. We don't have to leave till maybe 4 or 5 or whatever, catch a flight. That's when I do like a morning trip and kind of do something sightseeing-like. But most of the time, it's not like that. You don't have that luxury, you know?
Yeah, no. And I mean, what's cool about it is I do think you don't have that luxury, really. But there's also, there's something amazing about, you know, taking a walk and just going about half a mile through a place that you don't know, the amount that you can pick up and see the shops and feel the culture and feel the air, you know? And sometimes, you know, it's not the touristy places. So you really get to know, you know, a place, you know, and sometimes it's just you're in the bus and then the theater and then the bus and that was it, you know.
What's your bus routine? You have to have a bus routine, I'm sure, where it's like, yo, like my rhythm section, the big joke is like, no shitting on the bus. That's like the
number one rule. That's what we always say. Number one rule, no shitting on the bus. So I definitely I have frequented Walmart bathrooms more than I ever expected, you know, because sometimes you wake up and the bus might be parked there waiting to go to a venue or something. And you definitely have to change you just like any other job. You have to change your life and around it, you know, so it's you know, it's not a 7 a.m. wake up every single day, you know, because you're getting off at 1 a.m. or you're getting off at 2 and getting straight onto the bus, you know. And I do have to say my bus routine is I take a nap every day if I can. It might be 15 minutes, might be an hour, you know, just a quick reset in between when I have to set everything up. And then when I go on stage, you know, that reset is really sacred to me. And it's like my little space, you know, because on the bus, your bunk is your sacred space. Everything else is shared space. So you want to be cognizant of everyone else's and keep it as a team and make sure we're just all working together and cleaning up, you know. And but keeping in that routine is very important, like you said, because everything else is different. Every day, everything else is different. So, I definitely like the bus, but sometimes you get a lot less sightseeing on buses.
Right. You don't have as much of like window space, or just like maybe you're just not seeing. It's like you're in like dark. You're just basically in dark walls, basically, you know. And people underestimate how much musicians are kind of like traveling salesmen. The only difference is you get to like have the experience in like a cool venue or a cool club or a cool festival. Mm-hmm. Like how many times on the road were you like, oh my God, pinch me now. I'm playing the, you know, what venue, whatever venue, you know, the Fillmore, for example, or something like that.
Oh man. I mean, many of times, you know, there's just so many times where I try to, and with all this, you try to keep perspective and soak in the moment and understand, you know, like, I always say, a lot of times when I'm doing my solo show, I say, when I was writing songs as a 13-year-old, I never expected to come to Cincinnati or wherever I am, or Seattle and something, and people know them and sing them, you know?
That's cool.
You're just focused on just playing music. And so it's really important to, you know, keep that in perspective. And what's funny is the pinch me moments kind of sometimes happen afterwards, you know, because you're just like, I don't want to screw this up. You know, I gotta learn this song, or there's this person watching or whatever, you know. And then afterwards you finish the day and you go, holy shit, guys, that was amazing. You know what I mean? Like, how did we get here? How did that happen? Or, you know, and sometimes just that person that I never thought I'd meet was just as cool of a person as I expected, you know. Or And I would say venue-wise, that's been crazy too, of just looking around and soaking in the walls of a famous venue and knowing that all these people that laid the path for you have been there. And then now that you're there, it's just it's beautifully overwhelming, and it's good to take a moment, take a snapshot in your mind and go, I'm here, now back to work, you know. And
what venue was like a bucket list venue on this tour for you? I know you've seen some of, but recently there have been some new rooms that I'm sure you guys have played, right?
Decently. On Revival, we hit a lot of classic rooms. So it's like every time we do the Beacon Theater in New York,
amazing.
You know, it's like you walk through the halls and it's just, there's the elevator with all the signatures and all the pictures of the people, you know, every one of them from Jerry Seinfeld to, like, there's not one you don't know. And most venues, you know, you'll know like three or four, or there's kind of your friends, or maybe a genre specific, but you know every single one. And it's an incredible honor to be a part of that. The Fillmore is always a very sacred one too in San Francisco. Just
it's historic, especially because I know you love the Allman Brothers like I do. So it's like, man, that's like the Allman Brothers venue, you know.
Dude, if you look at the, like, you look at the posters, you know, I like to go around and look at the posters of the shows that were there, and there's like a show that was like Miles Davis opening for the Grateful Dead, like insane bills that you would never think of, that are just a once in a lifetime, you had to be there kind of thing. And just to think you're just like, hey, I hope I can bring it tonight, you know?
Right.
But it's, I think the room feeds into the performance as well, because you get some magical moments, because those walls and those ghosts, they help you through it, you know?
I always say that, like, the floors, like, they have magical fairy dust on them, because so many unbelievable people have walked on those floors and you don't think about it. So it's like, I always look at the floors of the stage, like, before, because, like, you just don't know who has walked on that stage until you walk through those halls and you're like, oh my God, it's a B.B. King, or oh my God, it's a James Brown, or oh my God, it's an Eric Clapton, or whoever it is. You know what I mean? So it's just cool when like those moments happen. Who's an artist or a musician that has sat in with the band that you were playing with where it was like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm trading solos with XYZ?
Oh man. Well, so maybe not the most famous, but I really, Robert Randolph is one of them. Because when I was 13, I was sitting in the crowd and he used to do this thing where he'd bring someone out of the crowd to play. And I was that kid. Wow. And so it was the first time when I was 13 that I got to play in front of, you know, it was probably 2,000 people, and he brought me up and, you know, I hung in there. That's and he awesome. Had me for a couple tunes, and then we started working together. And I started playing and I kind of just let it. And then I showed him a picture. He's like, wait, that's you? And I was like, yeah, the full circle moment kind of came around. That was a big pinch me moment for me to be like, holy cow, now I'm actually playing on that stage with that person who, you know, I looked up to and brought it. And I think, you know, I got to say, since I play with the Allman Brothers family, playing Allman Brothers in front of Allman Brothers,
That's gotta be crazy.
That's one of the most beautifully intense kind of situations, and everyone's way sweet, you know. But you know, being able to play a song or two with Dickie Betts side stage, or you know, playing Midnight Rider while Warren you're playing the guitar part while Warren Haynes is looking at you singing, you know, and you're just that's an unbelievable thing that you never kind of thought would happen, and you're just like, well, I'm here now. And you know, most of the time they're just sweet, hardworking people, you know? Right.
Did you say anything to Dickie when you met him? What was the thing that you said to Dickie when you met him?
Yeah, so I have a interesting Dickie story that was kind of separate. You know, he would be backstage and come with Dwayne, because I work with Dwayne Betts a lot. But there was one time actually where I was just golfing in Sarasota with a friend, and the Betts family kind of hooked us up with this golf tournament thing. And afterwards they said, oh, do you want to come by the house? And we were like, oh, okay. And, you know, we went in the living room and, you know, Dickie was just there in his chair. Wow. And the acoustic guitar that Sweet Melissa's on I forgot the name of it. Little Martha was played on is right there. And the best part about it was he just asked us about golf. Wow. He said, how'd you hit today? And he talked to him, you know, he's like, how'd you hit? And he was the one who helped us with the course and said, how's this guy? And how's, you know, and it was just like, it was really amazing. And I was with an older cat who Dickie's his favorite guitar player. And it was, you know, I just kind of sat back and soaked in them talking about golf and hanging out. And
who was that guitar player?
Or that was is a guy named John Ginty, who's actually an organ player and a wonderful friend. He's played with the Dixie Chicks and Wu-Tang Clan and Robert Randolph actually, and but he plays in the Allman Betts band and has played on a lot of Dwayne's records and things. And so it was just great to sit there and watch them and just see people be, you know, be human. And he just talked about how much he loves golf, and you know, and I think it's the weird things like that that I remember a lot of times. You know what I mean? It's the times of humanity that I think I remember. You know, at the Ryman, another great one. We had Jason Isbell one time.
Wow!
And that's one of my favorite songwriters of all time. You know,
he's great. I've seen him I think once or twice, and he's just so great,
so amazing, but such a sweet guy. And just we talked about St. Louis and this old club he used to play at that I was playing at the next week, you know, and that was, you know, that was pretty much it. Cause everything else is kind of the heat of battle. You know what I mean? Right. Everyone's worried about, well, what key's the song and what's this and what's the rig and blah, 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 because we're all, you know, trying to do our best. And so whenever you just get those moments where you're like, wow, this is crazy that we're just hanging out, you know, that's I think some of the best stuff.
Well, let's switch gears to, look, now you're doing your solo thing. Tell me what that experience is like, because it's like now you're the one in the forefront. It's your songs, your music, your band. You're doing the touring. Some of the luxuries aren't there. That's how it is. You know what I mean? So, like, tell me what that experience is like for touring and just performing and just getting your music out there.
Yeah. I mean, it's incredibly fulfilling in a different way. You know, it's definitely, I always say I could rough it so much harder with my own music, you know? But at the same time, what I've noticed is when I started playing, I play in the Devin Allman Project guitar. And when I started playing with Devin, you know, we were playing, medium blues clubs and things like that. And what's really crazy for me is when now I'm headlining those clubs. That's been a feeling where, you know, you're like, oh, I remember when I walked into this club and it was the biggest thing I'd ever played, you know, and then you played it and you're nervous and whatever. And then coming back and just seeing a poster on the door, you know, and having the venue kind of know you or things like that, and really building your own culture and your own base is just the greatest gift. But there's goods and bads about it, but it's really hard to, I always just say anytime I get to go play my own music,
right,
and somehow get paid for it, that's the dream right there. And that can go up and down throughout the rest of your career, and you can have a great gig at a really small club, and then you can have a pretty sterile gig at a big theater, you know? And so, but really to see that kind of come around and be like, oh, I'm the headliner. Like, I always joke that there's been some times I'll go to an old venue and I keep looking for the boss. I'm like, hey, I keep looking for people to ask. And they're like, no, we're asking you. And I'm like, well, what time's the show? They're like, yeah, we're asking you. And I was like, oh, well, I guess 8, you know?
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, it's different too, because it's like, you know, I always joke with my band that some of our best shows are when there are so few people in the audience and you have to tap into music. You can't ride on, oh yeah, we can do anything and the crowd's going to carry us. It's like, I feel like some of our best shows were in front of like 6 people in a bowling alley where the band outnumbered the people in the audience. And it's like, we're going to play for each other. And then all of a sudden it's like some of the most slamming things that are happening. Are you guys having those kind of experiences where it's like, rooms are packed, rooms are not packed, and you're getting some of those, like, the hard-earned shows are the ones where there's not as many people as you'd like. Are you going through that?
No, totally. I agree 100%. And especially where we're at right now, you know, you'll go to a market that you've been at before, and it's packed, and the vibe's there, and then you go to a market maybe you never have played, and you know, you learn to just understand that if you haven't been there, you have to build it, you know. But what I like, the way I like to think about it is that every single person that came through that door paid the same ticket price or a ticket price. So whether there's 100 people there or 5 people there, it's your duty to bring it.
Yes.
Because that person is just as important, you know, whether there's, that person is no less important if there's 200 people in the room. They're the same person and entity, and they're giving their time and their hard-earned money from whatever job to come out and see you. And well,
I think the other thing too is like, when you have a group of people, like if it's a packed house, people are going to stay. But when you have those small intimate shows and it's like 10 people and they stay, those people, the weight of their presence is way more, because it's like, you didn't have to stay. You could have walked out of the room just because we didn't bring as many people or whatever. And then when they stay, it's like, yo, I'm going to give you the show of your life. Like, I'm going to move mountains to make sure that you're moved when you leave. And that's really what it is. It's like, it's a weird, it's like the ones where it's in front of 10,000 people, 5,000 people, 1,000 people, where it's like, you can make mistakes and people are still going to cheer, and it's like, not going to matter. They're never going to know or be the wiser. But the one that, where it's like the intimate shows where, you know, you can hear the holes and the claps, you know, it's like, those are the shows where it's like, you really feel like, oh my God, I thank you for being here. And I'm going to make sure that I do whatever I can to make you stay, you know, that's the hard part about being on the road. We've had shows where like, we'll play and there'll be 2,500 people there. And then the next night there's 6. And it's like, okay, well, we just brought it last night. We have to bring it tonight. And that's what you have to do. And that's just the name of the game. And the next night you have to just like wipe it off like it's nothing.
Clean slate.
It's the hardest thing, I think. And I know you know this, when you're cultivating your own fan base, when, you know, like the Almond Vets band, I mean, the Almond Revival band, they're kind of like playing their their parents' music that basically, like, the fan base and everything has been rejuvenated because now it's being carried down in a legacy. But you're the legacy. You're starting the legacy with your music. So it's like no one's going to give you that benefit of like, oh yeah, I know that I know who your dad is, and I know this. It's like your songs, you're starting it from scratch. There's a different thing. Tell me what it's like to write in that capacity when you're putting out records, and like how you market or how you choose to like write in the style that you're writing in when you're putting out your own music.
Yeah, well, I think that's and real quick, a funny story about people not coming to the show. Real quick,
please.
But one of my favorite stories I ever like to tell is we played a gig in Iowa City, and one person came for the first time. But that lady drove 2 hours to come see
me. Wow.
Knew all the songs, everything, and we did the show. And her name's Robin. And so, but what's funny is every time I play in Iowa, you know, I like pretty much will stop the show or be like, Robin, are you out there? And we have that connection for life now, because no matter what, I'll remember you because you were there for me. You know what I mean? Yep. And so that's like a perfect example of just, you know, how that connection is sped up, you know, times five. But going back to the writing and kind of creating your own thing, it takes a long time. I think you got to go through a lot of phases, you know, and you get people that are pulling you this way or pulling you this way. And, you know, I think what I've ended up learning is, sounds kind of cheesy, but the best way I can write is if it's Jackson Stokes, you know, not thinking too hard about it, writing about my life, writing about the truth, writing about things that I relate to, you know, my life in my way. And that doesn't mean that you want it so specific, but it's just your point of view might resonate with someone else, or even they might hear a song and have a completely different meaning of what you had your song. Right. And neither one is right. If that's what they love and that's what brings them, then they're right. That's what the song was about, you know? And I just think, taking the time, especially in your 20s, I'm 32 now. So it's like, you know, I'm still, you know, learning every day as we all are. But, you know, in your 20s, you're like, well, I went through this phase and I played in a jazz band and I wrote, you know, this kind of music. And then I wrote a rock thing. And then, you know, and you start to figure out, like, what are the things that you do that gives that energy to that room where you can feel it. And you know, a lot of times you go through trying, you say, oh, well, this worked for this guy, so I'm going to try this. And you're like, well, why didn't that work for me? And it's, well, cause it's not you. That's right. That person. Right. You know what I mean?
Like wearing somebody else's shoes almost. Right.
Yeah. And I just think, like, you know, the mental health journey or any journey of knowing yourself outside of music helps you to write your own music. Right. So that's kind of important, is just understanding that life and getting your head and observing the normal day things over and over again and taking them down is what kind of, you know, I'm sorry, I'm losing my words, but that's what informs your writing.
Well, let's play something. What do you want to play us first?
Yeah, well, let's do our latest single is a song called Ride. And that one's got a video to it, but this is pretty much about being on the road. I started writing a bunch and we were talking about truth and what to write about. And I was like, well, I mean, right now I'm on the road all the time, you know, that's what I got to write about. And, but ride is also an allegory for life. You know, it's really that life is about, you think you're in the driver's seat, but you're really not.
Right.
You know, we're a passenger and we're on the ride. So we can't avoid the bumps and the potholes and those things. We just got to learn how to ride them and get through them and keep moving on. And so let go of the wheel and just, you know, start to ride with the good and bad. And life's going to be a lot easier for you.
I love that. Well, here it is. Here's Jackson Stokes with Ride.
Ride, ride, ride. Without stopping
this long, strange trip. Everything's closed. What the hell am I supposed to do? I'm stranded.
awesome, dude. Where did you film that? You kind of filmed it all over, but where did you film it mostly?
Yeah, so that was kind of done on the 50-50 tour, which is we did I did a tour that was 50 states in 49 days for a world record. Wow. With Devin Allman and Donovan Frankenreiter, who's another great surf artist, well, former pro surfer and now a great artist. And so, you know, we figured we had a videographer on there and we said, I was opening the show every night. I was teching, opening the show, playing in the band and helping load out. So what was kind of funny is like all that stuff is in between all of that, you know? So it was like, there's no like makeup or anything. It's just like, oh, we're going to do this right now. But I felt that kind of captured the road anyways. And, that last one was actually at our final show in Redondo Beach. The one I'm only singing and there's the water in the background.
It looked like Cali. When I saw the paddle surfers, I was like, wait a minute. That looks like Cali for sure.
Yeah, no, I definitely had to give a shout out. Yeah, we ended in Redondo Beach at the Beach Life Festival. And so it's, yeah, I mean, where more do you want to record a music video than, you know, than California, baby? So,
absolutely.
Yeah, but that was pretty much kind of all over. All those landscapes are just outside of the bus from Colorado to Kansas to, you know, obviously we're in every single one. So.
That's awesome. And what was the reason for the world record? They just wanted to try and capture as many states in as little a time.
We're just insane.
That's a lot of states in a very small amount of time.
It is. So it was Devin's idea for a little while back. He kind of had this crazy idea and didn't know whether he'd ever really do it. And we looked up and George Thorogood did a 50 states in 50 days back in, I think, the 80s or something, you know. And so I don't really know, like, why. We never really know why. But I think what's important is to just, you know, like anything, like if you're an athlete or something, is to challenge yourself. And right. Do something that I would have never even dreamed of doing. You know, I always wanted to see 50 states. That was kind of a goal of mine. I didn't think I'd do it in 49 days.
Crazy.
But it's pretty much just, you know, can we do this? Can we make this happen? And is this possible and feasible? And,
the most hectic leg? It must have been Alaska or Hawaii, right?
Yeah. So we had the key to it was the first day of the tour, we did two different shows. We did one in Annapolis, Maryland, and then a matinee. And then we drove up and did a festival in Pennsylvania that wow. night. So it's like a couple. So the first day, but that was easy because it's like, well, it's the first day. We got this energy, right. You know. The last week was we went up to Washington. Played Washington, flew to Alaska, played Alaska, came down to Oregon through Idaho to Vegas, Honolulu.
Oh my God.
Honolulu, Redondo Beach, Beach Life Festival.
Wow.
You know, and then what's funny is people don't know, but after it's all done, you know, the loadout was delayed. So everything was all done, but there was the, you know, me and three other people were still working 4 hours after we, got the record and did all that.
You can only do that in your 20s, man.
You know, totally. Yeah. And that was part of it. It's like, when are you going to do this? You know, and when else are you going to do it? And I just, those opportunities don't. And so I'm very thankful for Devin and Donovan for having me. And create making that possible, and they let me open. I would open every single show solo, for 15-20 minutes, and then play in the band. And I mean, I'll never forget that tour. And the team we had was really amazing. You know, you can't do it without an exceptional group of people.
Were they in the band together, Donovan and Devin?
Yeah, so they actually made an EP together like for this tour called Rollers. And so we had a repertoire of stuff that was specifically only for that tour, which was really cool. And then we would do a cut, like a Devin cut and a Donovan cut. But it was mainly we do that EP, which a lot of the band played on too. So everyone kind of had a little part in the whole thing. And, you know, it's just talking about moments, you know, you get little moments. We got to swim in Lake Superior. You know, I'd never surfed before. You'd love this, Nikki.
I love this already. Yes.
And my first lesson was with Donovan Frankenrider.
That's crazy. Did he bring you on a longboard? He must have brought you on a longboard.
Right? Yeah, he put me on a long. It was in Tybee Island, Georgia, you know, wow. which he was like, all the waves aren't. But I'm like, this is all we need. I can't, you know. So, but it was kind of funny because it really showed how it was like the quickest me and my friend David did it. And it was the quickest I've ever seen two people get up on a surfboard.
Wow.
So not only is he like, you know, a legend in that, but just an amazing teacher on, you know, concepts and things. And I mean, what really gets better than that? So I wasn't very good, but I definitely understand it now. I understand the beauty of it. So
I met him at Bonnaroo when we played, and he mm-hmm. played, I think he did another kind of like, there were like two stages where you do like a smaller set and then you do like your official set. And yeah. I met him on the smaller set show. And he was super cool. It was just like, he's a cool cat. Just a really cool cat. That's awesome. And I didn't know he was a professional surfer at one point and kind of did that. I don't know if you said that. Did you say that?
Yeah. So I didn't know this. I knew him from his music, but all my friends but a couple of my friends that are surfers were like, you know, Donovan Frankenrider. That's cool. I remember we went into one surf shop somewhere and the eyes on the people went like, wow. It was like someone, you know, it was like when some big, you know, artist comes in, you know what I mean? And so that was just really cool. But he's not like that. He's a total family man and just, you know, loves keeping things positive and having fun and watching Antiques Roadshow. And, you know,
that's awesome. Well, let's play something else. What do you want to play us next?
Let's do the other single. This one's called Gemini. It's kind of specifically about, you know, my sign, I guess, but really just, you know, the unpredictability of life, you know, and we can plan everything out and do whatever we can. But at the same time, whether you're believing the astrological signs or a deity or whatever religion, you know, it's good to believe in things, but it's also just rolling the dice, you know, at the same time. So, you know, just like anyone, you got to reflect on yourselves and your good and bads and, you know, Gemini's all about twins and dichotomy. And I think we all have the twin in us. You know, we have this part of us and this part of us, and they're always fighting, you know, and so really that's the basis of Gemini. So.
Well, here it is. Here's Gemini by Jackson Stokes.
Born in the city, not from the farm. Country manners with urban charm. Scared of the dark, but beneath the starry sky. Life's two ways, living Gemini. I wish I wrote a book about myself. Can you hang with a Gemini? I
hope that your sign works well with mine. Tell me, can you hang with the Gemini? Tell me, can you hang? Something isn't right. Mercury's in retrograde, and I'm standing in the dark. Stumbling, trying to find my way. Things I do, I can't explain. Asking why is a dangerous game. Doing me things I must be high. That's life living Gemini.
I wish I wrote a book about myself so you could read it. Well, I'm not perfect, need a little help, but I did it. Pick up the paper and read up on Gemini.
I hope that your sign works well with mine.
Man, that was funky. Very cool tune. Tell me what the inspiration and the groove and the style was like for you.
So, man, I love anything groovy and funky, you know? And so, I got inspired kind of for this song with two things. I was actually on the road with Eric Gales, who's one of the greatest guitar players.
He's a heavy hitter.
Heavy hitter. And we were kind of jamming before, and I got to hear him play rhythm guitar, which is like, what's cool is you'll hear a lead player do the lead.
He's so good.
But when you get to hear someone do rhythm guitar, I mean, it was over. And so I just remember I was kind of thinking of, like, you know, something in the vein of that with my Strat. And also, I'm very influenced by go-go music from Washington, D.C. And Chuck Brown and that whole scene is some of the funkiest. You know, a good go-go groove might be the funkiest thing in the world. And so, and I'm not saying that it's an exact go-go groove by any means, but that was my big inspiration for the groove. Was it was a circular kind of rhythm with the percussion, with a 2 and 4 in it. And so definitely go-go inspired, but, you know, with my light little Jackson way for sure.
Yeah. No, it's really like a poppy, funky tune. It's really great. It's like,
thank you.
It's just got a good groove. I love your work with the wah pedal. It's just awesome. You and I met a long time ago at Chuck Berry at Blueberry Hill in St. Louis. What a crazy show that was. I still tell people about it all the time because he played Go Johnny Go, Johnny Be Good, 3 different times in the show in the wrong key. And it was just like not the show I ever thought it would be because he was just so old, but it was still such a cool experience just to, you know, see Chuck Berry at that age. You know what I mean? He was 83, I think, at the time.
So I would have to like kind of look this up, but I think that was his last show.
Really?
So I thought about it in because I don't know how long after that he passed away, but I really don't think he played another show after that.
Wow.
I'd love
to know that. If that was the truth, then man, that's because I know he was like out of it. He was dead. And the crazy thing is, remember we met trying to meet him afterwards, and like they're like, oh yeah, he's already driven home. And I'm like, that guy drove home? Like, that's not good.
Yeah, I think maybe a cousin or something. No, it was, yeah, man, it was an interesting night for sure. And it's definitely you know, you know, when you get to that age, you're just like, man, if you're on stage, then kudos to that. You know, we're kind of here for the legacy you gave us. Maybe not the exact things right now. And I remember us talking about it though, is every once in a while it would pop out. It would be, yes. there he is.
Yes. Yeah. Every now and then when he was playing in the right key, all of a sudden you're just like, oh my God, this is awesome. And then he would just do something to derail it. And it was just like, what was that? The weird thing is, like, I've seen B.B. King around the same age and he was still all together. And Chuck Berry was not. It was like, that's what I was so disappointed. I was like, man, he just must be in a different mental state than B.B. King at that age, just because, you know, it was crazy. But you later sat in with us at Summerfest with Gary, when we opened for Gary Clark Jr. That was such a fun experience. And now you've been doing this touring thing and you've got so many miles under your belt. What do you think is the one thing that keeps you inspired to just stay grounded and keep doing this?
You know, honestly, the people and the fans, I don't have a big fan base by any means, you know, I don't have huge numbers or whatever, but even just someone sending you a message or someone like you believing in me, you know, is part of the thing where you go, you know what, maybe there is something here. Cause it's not always me believing in myself, you know, that's a never ending battle. That I lose a lot of times, you know. Yeah. But it's really just, you know, I'll never stop writing music, but the whole active and going out is when people, you really see their faces and they thank you and they, you know, show you places in the world. And I think the key is just, something's always different about it, you know, and it's just my way to relate to the world. I can't really quite explain it. You know, I always tell people, like, if you can do anything else, do it. Don't do this.
Right.
So, like, don't do the tour thing. Don't do the music thing. Maybe do all that at home. And we need that. We need all of it, you know, but there's just something about it when you're in your bones, you know, you got to be as excited to go to Kansas City as you are Australia, you know, within reason, but that's, you know, part of it that keeps you going is just that and being, you know, having those moments, really searching for those moments, you know. I've never been a huge Dead fan, but that's what the Grateful Dead did, is they constantly search for moments. And even though there's moments of weirdness and offness, you're just hoping that you're going to, and then it'll come, you know.
Right.
And that's why you go through the long drives and this and, you know, that stuff is because you'll get these moments that are just absolutely out of this world. And you know, but you got to work for them too, and you gotta,
it's funny, I'm sure you guys are doing this now too. It's like, we always joke about the shows. We played one show in front of 2,500 people and there was a guy in the front wearing a hard hat, and he straight up looked like he was dressed out of the Village People, or he just fixed the light fixture outside, and he was just like dancing in the front. And like, that's the one guy that the whole band talks about. Like, there were 2,500 people, but that's the guy everybody was like, this guy is wacky, but that's the person you remember. So you, like, you remember certain funny things on the road that like all the rest of the stuff will become blurs, like the people and the crowds. But there's always like funny anecdotes, like where people will like show themselves in a way that you're like, yo, I'm going to remember this because this is so peculiar and odd that this will just be in our memory bank. And we still talk about how funny that show was, because it was like a college show, all college kids and one guy in a hard hat. It was like, what? This doesn't make sense. So have you had any of those experiences on the road where there's like just funny things that you're like, yo, did you see so-and-so person in the audience? There has to be some.
I have a concept about this. It's called that guy or that person, you know, not to be gender specific, but where you, when you finish the show, you can go to the band and you go, hey, did you see that guy? Hey, did you see that gal? And you don't have to describe anything else. And they'll be like, oh, I saw her or I saw him, you know, and that happens. And, sometimes it's you know, sometimes that's good, sometimes right. it's bad,
right.
you know, but most of the time what it comes from is passion.
Right.
And that's what's amazing to me is the amount of passion someone can get out of you emoting, you know, and especially right. when it involves your music.
Right.
That's insane. You know, I like, there's been many people who have come up and cried to me at the merch booth, you know, yeah. and about whatever, about joy or a song, you know, and, you know, we just hug and I just hold them and, you right. know, like, what?
I mean, those are the reasons why we do this, to be honest.
Thank you. That's couldn't have said it better. Yeah.
I had one girl come up to me and I don't even know who she is, but she came up to me after one of our House of Blues shows and she was like, her eyes were like welling up. And I was like, hey, what's going on? She was like, my friend told me I had the worst day today at work. I just had the worst day. And my friend called me and said, you're coming with me and you're going to come see this band. And she said, you just lifted my mood so much. And like, she was like in tears. And I just was like, I got to give you a hug. Cause like, this is why we do this. It's like, the people that are just coming to party, that's one thing, but it's like, you really want to reach people and you really want to save their days or save their, you know, moods. And it's like, that's why we do what we do. It's like, we're healers on some level. And it's like, that's what we're hoping to do. So I love that you're having those moments because those are the people that you'll remember. Those are the things that you're going to remember as you write songs and you're writing on the, are you writing on the road, like in hotel rooms? I'm sure you are.
Yes and no. I'm always taking notes. You know what I mean? I think you're always taking notes. You're always taking, you know, things and little ideas. I definitely, when I come home, I get more to like put them together. You know, I would say the road's right. a lot of ideas and, you know, but you never know when something's going to strike. And, right. And so there's, you know, you have voice memos from you in a little bathroom. You know?
That's my writing tool, bro. Yeah.
Voice memos, man. No. And, yeah. And so, you know, but I think there's a mix too, cause I have learned that there's times when just to soak it in, soak it up, you know, and like, you know, maybe today is not your day, but today is to observe and maybe listen to a record and, you know, start to fill up that bank and things like that. Yeah.
Well, let's play another song. What are you going to play us next?
Let's go with let's say there's a song called Don't Tempt Me, and I think at the beginning of the YouTube video I might do a little speech or something like that. So
I watched it earlier. It's cool. I like the speech.
Cool. Yeah. I like to keep it, you know, loose and very personal when I do my shows. You know, I like to talk to the audience like we're two people in a room, because we are two people in a room, you know. Right. But that's me, though. Not every artist is the same. So, you know, Don't Tempt Me is an interesting, you know, I like these things called all day grooves, which are, you know, like Bill Withers, Use Me. You know, it's like, yeah. It can go all day, all, you know, and so, but I just felt this song's about, you know, when you want to say something, but you're not saying it, you know. And like there's a little kind of sexy aspect to it of, you know, tell me what you want. And I know what you want, but tell me, you know. But it's also in the same thing with any relationship. Like let's cut the BS and tell me what you feel. And if we're in it together, it's, you know, like tell your loved ones that you miss them. You know what I mean? Or tell them that you love them, or and vice versa. If you have something that you need to work out with someone, you know, discuss it and work it out humanely. And so it's rather simple kind of surface, you know. It's just called Don't Tempt Me. Tell me what you want from me, you know?
Well, let's play it. Here's Don't Tempt Me by Jackson Stokes.
This is crazy to me. This one's called, I wrote late one night, this one's called Don't Tempt Me. Don't tempt me, tempt me, baby, what you want from me? Thank you.
Cool, man. Super funky, super, super cool. What are you using for your overdrive these days? Tube Screamer?
Well, actually, recently I've been on the 2005 Bad Monkey.
Oh, okay. I don't know.
Yeah. So, well, I rotate through a couple. So I do love the Analog Man King of Tone. And that's a classic. Great pedal. And then, but lately I whipped out my 2005 Bad Monkey. There's like that whole thing where they went crazy and yeah. I looked in my basement and I realized I had a fresh one that I just always thought was like so low end that I was like, oh, I'm not, you know, and I brought it out on 50/50 tour and someone was like, what is that? That sounds great. And I was like, oh, it's Bad Monkey, you know? So I started, working with that. But, you know, what's kind of funny too is, especially with the Almond stuff, you know, sometimes I'm just turning the amp up to 10. So
I've been volume knob.
What's up?
You're using your volume knob basically as your overdrive.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's kind of the main thing. I do it a little different. Mine's a little different when I'm solo, because sometimes I do like a cleaner tone. I've kind of been, me and the producer really just like a clean kind of funk tone.
Right.
But I definitely do. I like to crank up that amp and get all that from 1 to 10, because every single different thing is a different character, and it kind of blossoms, and I do a lot of volume swells with it. And so, but what I do a lot of times is I'll like play half of a solo with just the amp and then click on my King of Tone to give me that more sustain and kind of go. So, but that took me a while to develop. It is an animal playing straight through an amp. Loud. Right. It is like driving a fast sports car. You have to handle it well because it'll come screaming back at you. But when you learn to handle it, it's hard to it's a tone, you know what I mean?
What's cool is like I've been playing with so many old school blues cats like Larry McRae and other guys.
Yeah, talk about
them. Oh yeah, well I love that cat, but a lot of them they don't use a lot of pedals. They don't use it's like amp, guitar, maybe a pedal. Like mm-hmm. like John Primer, like he was like joking with me. He's like, yo, you got a lot of pedals. I don't use those. I was like, I know you're old school. Like you're just going to make the amp sing in a different way. But I'm like, I need all the tricks. I need all the bells and whistles because like, that's the era I grew up in. I love all the toys. I love the artist palette of guitar. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I think you're the same way. It's like, there are toys. And then there are some times where I still go direct and that's it. And it's just like amp, guitar, nothing else. And
yeah.
So great about that, you know.
Yeah, and for me it just all depends on the gig, you know what I mean? And you know, because the other thing too is even with my solo thing, I might be playing in another band and then go on a solo thing, so I'll like try to incorporate what I learned from that into there, and sometimes it, you know, really works and sometimes it, you know, kind of fails or whatever. So but at the same time, you know, yeah, it's kind of a mix between a little bit of everything. But I think I had to learn the minimalist. I worked with a lot of pedals and then had to learn how to play with no pedals. And right. then you can come back from that and be like, you know what? I could use a little delay.
Where can people find you if they want to find you online and want to find your music?
Yeah, well, you could definitely find just Jackson Stokes on Spotify, Facebook, Instagram. I should come up decently right away. And or you could just type it in on the Google or whatever too. But JacksonStokes.com, you can find all our tour dates. We're doing a Southeastern tour starting tomorrow. I'm in the van at 8 a.m.
Nice.
And so, yeah, so we're doing that in the Southeast. And we'll be doing about 3 or 4 month-long tours this month. And hopefully one day we'll get out to the West Coast. And see.
Yeah, them. Man, you're overdue for a Cali show, man. We'll have to do some touring or some shows together. That'd be good.
I would absolutely love that, man. That would be awesome. And all of everyone in the Midwest is thinking about y'all and your families and your community. And I met my wife at the Mint.
That's right.
In LA, and spent a lot of time in LA. It holds a very, very special place in my heart. So it was an honor to be on this show and just know that we're all thinking about you and supporting you guys too.
Thanks, man. Well, Jackson, you know, you and I are always going to be great friends. I love you a lot. And mm-hmm. I appreciate, you know, just like the love for LA. LA is going through a hard time right now, but on a side note, if you want to check out Jackson Stokes' music, check it out on Spotify. Check him out on YouTube. Check out his touring dates. On behalf of Jackson, myself, and Sam, we'll see you guys next week. Take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. Los Angeles, I love you, and let's get through this together. We'll come out strong. Peace and love, everybody. Peace, love, and hair grease.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kalula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.